Come on, people. It's time to live it up.
Hi, this is Rosemary Rodriguez, your host of The Director's Chair. Super excited launching this new podcast. This is the place to talk about directing, producing, writing, acting, and any other trash Hollywood talk that comes up. There's no restrictions, there's no politics, just honest talk about what it's really like to be a part of the film and television industry. Our focus will always be about collaboration, when it works, and when it doesn't. That's really what I want to do this about collaborating with people. So every show is going to feature different guests along with current of the moment topics. And tonight my guest co-host is Tanya McKiernan.
Hello.
How you doing, Tanya?
I'm great. I'm excited to be here.
I'm so happy you're here. And Tanya is a TV director of shows like Criminal Minds, Blue Bloods, Grimm, and Devious Maids. And our special guest is Tony-nominated, two-time SAG Award winner, Elizabeth Rodriguez.
Woohoo! Hello.
So happy to have you here.
Hi.
Those of you that don't know Elizabeth, start watching Orange is the New Black. Start watching Fear the Walking Dead,
Woo-hoo!
Grimm, and Power.
Those
shows. It's
awesome. That's all going on, isn't it?
Really happy to have you guys on here. Really, really happy. You know, you guys have done some similar shows. I just mentioned Devious Maids.
Yeah, I haven't done it, but I'm going to do a couple of episodes.
This season?
Yeah, really soon.
Oh, awesome. It's a good show. The whole cast is amazing.
I'm friends with a couple of those gorgeous women, so I'm excited to go play. Yeah. That'll be cool.
But you also have in common Grimm. And ER.
Yeah.
You've never worked together, right?
We've never worked together, no.
Okay.
And I'm a Fear of the Walking Dead fan, so I'm like a fanatic Walking Dead, Fear of the Walking Dead.
Are you?
Yeah.
It was pretty awesome.
Yeah. Was it? Was it great?
It was pretty great. I love that cast. Creating that character, figuring her out, and then what I saw in real time when everyone else was watching, who Liza became, was sort of outside of my body and outside of my control. And so I kind of fell in love with her, and she had such an epic story, which we don't want to give it away just in case a lot of people haven't watched it.
In case the losers who haven't watched it yet, a lot of people have watched it though.
Yeah.
Very popular show.
Yeah.
And so did you know when you started were all the scripts done? The arc of your character?
I did. I didn't know exactly what was going on. It was more like, so we're doing 6 episodes and it's going to be really important to the storyline. But I didn't know, who she was per se until they didn't release all 6 episodes to us. So,
right. But you had an idea where the end game was going, maybe, or no?
Not how. I knew the end game for sure.
So when you're going to do a show, any show, and you're offered a part and you get a script, Do you have the communication with the writer? Who do you ask? Like, how do you find out where your character's going? Or do you need to know? Or do you just deal with that one episode?
I've almost never got to know where my character goes. That's been the experience from the beginning with Orange. No one had any idea, I think, who their character was. I found out the day I got to work, which was principal day of photography of the first season. We all were figuring out. There was an on-set producer, which I adore, named Lisa Vindicor. And she was walking around trying to figure out who's wearing what tattoo and where. And we had like choices. And I was like, I want the really, really bad, awful, like clearly cheaply made tattoo. And then she totally gave us like a little bit of our backstory. And I had come to my own conclusion as an actor as to why it was that I was slapping my daughter. And it was cannot be farther away from the backstory of why it was. And so it was all this brand new news to me, which was sort of like through me, even while I was shooting it, I kept being told, you know, to sort of be less aggressive.
And you're like, but that doesn't match my backstory.
I'm like, exactly. They should have told me that news earlier.
But that can happen, right? It can really throw you off sometimes.
Well, yeah. I was finding out this information for the first time. So was my character.
Right.
So it's challenging. And so I think no one, I don't know how much the writers on that show actually knew where people were going. And I'm always afraid of being, quote unquote, that actor that sort of like can be perceived as like anything negative. And so I don't know.
Well, what does that mean? Let's stay there for a second.
Wait, I just want to tell you where. Go ahead. So I don't know what writer to ask anything to, because, you know, the writers aren't there necessarily to tell you, or they're told maybe that they're not, you know, not to give anything away, for all sorts of reasons, not necessarily because of the actor, but maybe because they want to protect the show or the story.
Right.
So I'm never one to be like, what's going on? Where is this going? What's up going?
Meaning they don't want the storylines to get out.
If they even know them. So I'm never that person, because I don't want to, it seem like I'm being pushy, or I'm trying to get somewhere, or I'm trying to influence something.
If that's what you mean by negative?
One of the very long lists of things that could be perceived for an actor where, you know, it's not the, you know, it's never my intention. I can't talk about all the other actors. I mean, I've known and heard stories of people walking in, getting parts, and then be like, yeah, I'm kind of thinking, like, I don't really believe, da, 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 and then somehow they end up getting written out.
Or sometimes they don't.
Sometimes they don't.
You never know.
I can't afford that. So, I mean,
so that's what we're talking about is the politics of being on set or being on a show.
For me,
politics on set.
I mean, I don't know. I'm sure that some of the actors must have relationships with the writers and find out, you know, information along the way. But at the very beginning, particularly that first season, there was no way I was going to do that. So I've never been on something that wasn't forthcoming from a showrunner or a producer or a writer to me that I sort of ever tried to, you know, try to get out of them by...
I understand. Yeah. And Tanya, have you ever been on set too? Like, this just happened to me on The Good Wife, where I had a scene with a couple actors and I had information from the executive producer about their characters that they didn't have. And so when I gave it to them, but then they were like, just to get any information was like, oh my God, like it kind of rocked them a little bit.
Well, I think it's hard. I mean, it's funny that we're talking about this, because today at work I was telling a story about when I was on NYPD Blue and I had done an episode where Jimmy Smits had come back from the dead. And Stephen Boschko didn't want anybody to know about it. So it wasn't in the script. You couldn't even tell the actors. So you would sit there and I'd have two scripts. I'd have the one that was the real script, and then I'd have the lie script that everybody else got, you know? And so you're like, okay, you know, and then people would forget that new, and then they'd start speaking, and I'm like, no. You know, because nobody was supposed to know that he was coming until he came that day.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
You know, and so then that puts everybody else, because then you have to manufacture stories because you've been told, you know, because like, let's say I have to get a performance from her and maybe she's in the scene the day that he shows up, but I can't say you're going to be in the scene with him until the day, because that's the directive that you've been given, you know, right. And not that that happened on that show, but so it becomes very hard. So I would think that would be hard for the actors, because their preparation comes from knowing everything. Just like as a director, if you're on a show and let's say there's a character that has an arc, you need to know what that arc is so that when you're directing that particular show, you can help that actor, you know, go through whatever, or at least know, so that when they sit there and they go, well, you know, my father died in the other episode, you're not going, oh, really? Did they? You know, so it's very hard when you get put in those positions, but there's reasons for it. It's like you don't want to have people knowing, because then it would have gotten out, because Jimmy Smits was such a huge character for that show, you know, so they didn't want anybody to know about it.
I find that it's a huge burden to hold. I mean, with fear, knowing it was weird because you didn't know who knew. You kind of thought, okay, the department heads must, or they'll know soon enough. But you don't know if they know that I know, because most of the time the actor doesn't know, almost always. And so then there's the other actors that you're working with that you, you know, start talking about season two and certain things. And I don't let... You end up feeling a little sort of like false, and it was hard. It was really hard for me to know that. But at the same time, like with Orange, we just basically play the scene or that episode, the scenes in that episode, and that you can be truthful to that. And for the most part, it does end up working because it has in that show.
Mm-hmm. Well, don't you find that if somebody at least knows on the set knows what the whole thing is, that's helpful? Like, even if they can't tell you, well, your character goes here.
Well,
your
I'm always trying to get the information. As soon as I get the script, I'll have certain questions. And I'm always trying to get the information as if I'm the actor and I need to know, because I'm the director mm-hmm. too. And so mm-hmm. I need to know these things. And I'm always trying to anticipate if the actors are going to have any questions about anything. I'm trying to like anticipate what those questions are so that I know, but also to tell the story that I'm trying to tell. So that once I get on set, and sometimes, you know, it can be a little annoying maybe to have so many questions, but, you know, you want to sort of serve the story, and I don't want to get caught out there once I'm on set. You know what I mean? And I want to be the person that the actor comes to when I'm on set that can give them that information. I don't want have to go somewhere else for it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I feel like it kind of messes up the trust in our relationship. And I feel like I'm primarily there for the actors.
Right. I mean, I think that's tricky too when you talk about episodic, because mm-hmm. if you're like you're a director on The Good Wife and you go back multiple times, so you have built that trust and mm-hmm. they know you know what you're talking about. If you're new to a show or you just try the show, then everybody's sort of looking at you like, you don't know anything, you know? And so it's almost that much more important to be informed, because mm-hmm. if you're not informed, you know, like I always make sure that I at least know the whole season of that season or the whole season of the season before, so that when I'm talking to an actor, I know where that character went, even if it has nothing to do with the story that I'm telling.
Right, exactly. It's true. I mean, it's so hard on you guys, on you actors. I think it's very difficult, but I think if you just break it down and do the best scene possible, the best episode, you know, for the moment, that's lots of times all you can do, right?
Yeah, that's pretty much how all four seasons of Orange have gone for the most part.
Yeah. And it works. Clearly it works. It's a great show.
Yeah, there've been guest stars that have walked in and been completely thrown by not having any, you know, idea of backstory or future story. And I'm like, oh, yeah, no, that's how it works here.
That's the way it goes. And that's okay, because it works.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess at this point, you're playing this character, so, you know, if there's something tonally that starts feeling the same, or you're getting directed in a way the same because it's being all watched at once now, all these shows, particularly, you know, obviously all the Netflix shows. So sometimes the storyline doesn't move that much from episode to episode. And when a director comes in trying to, you know, sort of direct you sort of in the same, I'm like, yeah, we played that note.
Right.
And I can do that. Sometimes I feel a little like is insecure that we actually played that note more than once in more than one episode.
Mm-hmm.
But
so how does that work?
They're really trusting of, like, I think, you know, we also have a lot of the same directors, so you trust them. But sometimes, you know, but they're open to hearing you be like, oh, okay, you know.
Then when that happens, somebody comes up to you, hey, how about we do this? And you're like, well, we already sort of been playing that. I'm trying to play something different. Do you come up with a different idea? Or do you end up, is that a conversation?
A little bit, like, you know, okay, so let's find something else that isn't, you know, like what else the colors could, you know. It's not a long conversation.
Mm-hmm. There's no time for that, right?
Yeah, we'll find it in the takes sometimes. Right. Depends on the director.
And what is your favorite thing that you like about acting?
Oh, good question, Rosemary Rodriguez.
She's got some good ones.
I think it's being able to bring life and heart to characters that might not necessarily be likable or seen or represented any the most, but I think just being able to play all these characters, you know, you start believing, like, I still walk down the street now after all that training from Miami Vice thinking that I'm a badass, thinking that, oh, I still can actually shoot guns because I learned how to shoot guns. Where else would I ever have that kind of training, right, more than even police officers and, you know, detectives and, you know, get to play an FBI agent. All of a sudden you're like, oh, yeah, there is a hierarchy. You feel it in the clothes you wear and the car they give you to drive. like on Grim Rolls, and I'm pulling up, I'm like, I'm fancier than you. So you actually get to step in these other lives. And that, you know, that's priceless.
Is that one of your favorite parts, Miami Vice? You were great in that movie.
I think because of the experience of all the preparation to become that character, I think there was so much preparation that I actually was transformed physically, mentally. It was like 3 months of prep. So I learned a lot. And then I was like, who are you? Like, I actually believed I can.
Well, you're walking down the streets of South Beach. Like, yeah, like ripped up.
Ripped up, knowing that I've done more like weapons training than most cops all their lives. And, you know, trained with SWAT. So I'm sorry, I went out to, like, you know, some busts. So you actually, like, literally start believing it because you're like, it's in your body in this different way.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So what happens when that character, when you're done with that? Do you mourn that character or what happens?
It depends. The you know, I think you do often on that in that particular at that particular time, I didn't have time to mourn her because I went immediately into doing a play with some incredible actors.
And, which was?
The Beauty of the Father, that Pedro Pascal, Oscar Isaacs, a couple of other amazing actors were in. And I had to be the softest, sweetest, most innocent girl. And so I mean, I could not have, you know, started out further away from that character to become her. Right. And it was a lot of stress to sort of like get there really quickly in a very, very short.
And how'd you do it?
I don't know if I ever actually accomplished it fully. I think if I would have started out at, you know, zero, I would have probably been able to accomplish it more. I mean, I don't know. I did all the work. You know, you just immerse yourself into this other life. And you hope that, like...
And you had great actors around you.
I did.
But ultimately...
Richie Koster.
Yeah.
You saw that play?
I did, yeah. I went to... That's the first time I saw Oscar Isaac in anything.
Yeah.
It's like amazing.
Yeah. I'm so happy for him.
I know. He's really doing well.
He...
Like you. He's doing great.
Yeah. Kind of like me, but not.
Well, he's a guy, first of all.
He's, you know, his trajectory was already like through the roof then.
And Pedro does well too.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does.
They do really well.
Priscilla Lopez, the Priscilla Lopez, was in it.
Hmm.
I mean, if no one knows who she is, she was the original cast of the original Chorus Line. She helped create. That was her story. Look it up. Google it.
And so Priscilla Lopez. Maybe she's listening right now.
Yeah.
She could be. Maybe she lives in New York. Maybe she is. And so, and does that happen also? That happens to me, Tanya. Does that happen to you too? Where like you go from like certain shows, you do one or two episodes of a certain type of show that's really dark. And then all of a sudden you're in a comedy and then you're sort of like.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you kind of forget, and you're like, oh, shit, I get to do this now instead. Like, yeah. You kind of feel freer of, like, changing it up.
Well, for me, it's like when I go from show to show to show, I really will not prep for a show that I'm going into from a show that I'm currently directing because there's a visual style, and I don't want to get messed up in the visual style. So it's like I like to complete the job that I'm doing and then kind of immerse myself in the episodes of the show that I'm going into because then I start to... You know, I have a distinctive directing style, but you fit in with the style of whatever show that you're doing. And so it's like, I need to sort of live that probably a lot like you do as having a character just to be able to tell the best story in the way that show tells their story.
Mm-hmm. It depends. Like, when I went back to Orange this last season, I was so fully immersed in Liza from Fear that when I first showed up on the set of Orange, I was sort of out of body. I was working one day and I was just sort of out of body. And then I was able to finish Fear. So she was so fully alive because I just spent so many months. I was able to finish Fear. And then when I went back to Orange, it felt more real. And, you know, and that character already lives inside of me. I do, though, enjoy jumping out and sort of like going and doing, you know, three episodes of Grimm back to back and playing the FBI agent. It's really great because I've played a lot of cops. So, you know, that's already my wheelhouse. So like from going, it's sometimes just a breath of fresh air to be able to play characters that are opposite at the same time in terms of like, so no one, you know, pigeonholes you, though. You know, most people, regardless of how long I've been doing this, will know me for Orange, which I love Aleda. I protect Aleda. I think she, you know, is a result of her environment, and she's so easily judged, and you know, I get that. But like, I love that. Like in season three, there was a bit of I was able to do a little. There was a flashback where you got to see her young and what she actually wanted for her daughter, and mm-hmm. you know, you get to see more of her heart, mm-hmm. more of, you know, of who she was. And I think that's this incredible thing about Orange, that you know, these characters that we all can't help but judge or find things out about, you find out what it is that they did, and you know, they become so human, so complex, like we all are.
Well, I think it's really interesting that you have your daughter with you there too. I think that's really makes it, it gives you opportunities to do other, show other sides of her.
Relationship and relationships within outside of it. It complicates it.
I think we have a caller right now.
Well,
our first caller. Who is that? Hello?
They hung up.
Did they hang up?
They got scared.
Man.
They got nervous.
Oh, well.
Hello?
Hello?
Hello? Oh, good. You guys can hear me.
We can hear you. Who's this?
Hi. It's Vivian. Hi, Mama.
Hi, Vivian.
What? That's amazing.
Hi, lady.
Oh, my God. That's hilarious. This is one of my closest friends on the planet, Vivian, calling from upstate New York.
Wow.
I love her.
She's up late.
Dearly. Yeah, she's up late. What's going on? You have a question?
I have a question. So we are so proud of both you, Rodriguez women. And my question to you is, what are you doing next, my darling?
What am I doing next?
We can't wait to see you. We can't wait to see you either in the theater or on TV or on the big screen. What are you doing?
Oh, can
you
say? Yeah.
Can you hint?
I'm about to go do two episodes of Devious Maids. So I'll be hanging out with some fancy, beautiful Latina women. It'll be great.
They are awesome.
I'm sure there's going to be a lot of laughter and, like, you know, just warmth. And so I go out in a couple weeks for like a few, 5 days, and then I come back, and then I don't know when I go back out because we don't have the schedule for that.
Awesome.
And hopefully other stuff is coming up. I don't know.
Anything's possible. But I'm really happy, Vivian, because I just saw Elizabeth with like the biggest smile I've seen on her face in a long time, just with you calling. She lit up.
That's amazing. I was just like,
I know. I also didn't tell anyone that we're related yet. We didn't even say that part.
I know.
That like Elizabeth is my sister-in-law. How lucky am I?
I'm lucky. I'm so proud of you, Rosemary. You're amazing.
Don't start.
No, don't go cry.
Go there now. It's okay.
Yeah, you can't make the host cry.
No,
that's not
never,
good.
Never. Vivian, it's so cool that you called. Thank you so much for your support. We're really happy to hear from you.
Very, very welcome, and continued success throughout 2016 and the rest of your careers.
Thank you. I love you. I'll speak to you soon.
All right, baby.
Hey, I'm not finished. We're not done with you yet.
Oh.
Who's that?
That's Nelson, her husband.
Nelson.
Do you have a question too?
I do, sweetheart.
Oh,
sweetheart.
First, I want to congratulate you and tell you so you can hear my voice and not just fight text on the SAG Award for Orange.
Thank you.
For all of you. And, you know, every time that we see you on the screen, on TV or in person, we get so excited. I get excited. And you look so, so beautiful.
Thank you.
Oh, my gosh. You look beautiful.
It takes a village.
Let me get to my question. As an actor, and not only as an actor, as a Latina actor, what is your dream role if you do have one?
That was my next question. I swear to God, I'm not making it up. That was awesome, Nelson.
Well, my dream role would be to be the lead. I dare myself to even dream it, but now I've been dreaming it recently. It would be to be a lead on a show, and maybe it be a comedy.
Oh, wow. You're great.
I think I would like to do a sitcom. I mean, you know, in front of a live audience, which is something you get from theater, but it's a whole different animal when it's a sitcom. There's different timing, and like to be a lead in something like that, like ahead of a family, and be able to like just be clowny all the time.
I think that'd be perfect for you. Remember that play you did with Paul? You did this play. What's the name of that play? It was like
A
Reservation for Two, where you just go in. My God.
And things just hijinks.
Oh my God, it was hilarious.
I want hijinks.
It was almost slapstick. That thing was so crazy.
I mean, because
you were perfect, and I always felt like nobody gets to see that side of you because you get typecast or whatever.
Well, they're writing.
Parts.
I think oftentimes it's because things don't get written. You know, you get a character, she doesn't get fully developed, so you see pieces. I mean, you get to see a little bit of that in a later sometimes with the way I deliver lines that, like, you know, are outrageous and I commit to them. But I think to be able to then sort of also be like physical and big opposed to having to shut it down. I always talk about, like, when I go to auditions, for years I used to walk into auditions being myself. Oh, hello. And like, there's a part of being an actor that you want to be liked, even if you don't get the part. You just go in, you want to be liked.
Directors too.
Yeah. And so I would go in and I would be like, you know, me. And then I would audition, and I remember whether it was for something, and there's different tones to things. And so, like, for dramas, you have to like be really grounded, and depending on the way the show is filmed, you have to know these things. And I remember once a casting director, which I don't remember the name. Also, I would just say it right now. I'm kidding.
We'll have Cliff Notes versions afterwards.
They got back to my manager and said that I was pushing in my audition.
Oh,
and
man.
I just remember thinking, what, are you kidding me? Didn't you see who walked into the room?
Get out of here.
Like, pushing meaning like that I was trying too hard in the scene. And I just remember thinking, were they not aware of who walked into the room? So now when I go into audition a lot, but like straight dramas, 1 hour, I always pull it back. Like, some people might pull it back 10, 20%. I pull it back like 90%.
Right. Oh, but see,
we have another caller.
Oh, another caller. I love you guys. Bye.
Thank you.
Well, the one thing I wanted to say is I love when actors come in casting and they just go for it. Because
absolutely.
Because that's when you really see. I mean, you can always ask somebody to pull it back. The hardest part is when they don't.
Right.
When they don't, you know, go out there and show you something. And it's usually the people that do the stuff that's really interesting or not right on point that end up getting the job a lot of the times, because you can just see what they're doing, or they bring such life, or they do things that, you know, that you've never seen before. And then you're like, oh my God, I want to watch that.
Or you want to just hang out with that person.
Yeah, totally.
Also, you're in casting, you're seeing like a million people.
Of course.
And then you're just like, somebody comes in that's full of life. It's like a breath of fresh air.
Until they tell you you're pushing. I'm like, what?
Oh, please.
What?
I don't even think that's a good note.
It wasn't even a note. It was casting. I know. It was casting. No, that's not sparing anybody. That's insulting.
No, I'm saying you're being spared because you'd get on a set.
Right.
And it would probably be torture.
Right, right, right.
So yeah. However right. It didn't happen.
Right. But I'm happy to walk in being who I am and then pulling it back and grounding myself and letting them see that I actually am capable of doing that really well.
Because everyone should know what you're capable of by now, by the way.
Yeah.
Do we have another caller?
Hi, boss.
Hi. Who's this?
Jamel.
Hey, Jamel. How are you?
All right. Just checking out your podcast since I saw it earlier. How are you guys doing? And congratulations on Jessica Jones.
Oh, thank you so much. Jamel was an intern for me. He kicked ass, like very serious.
Hi.
Very responsible.
Hello.
And he's a director, so now he's got his own short. He's got his film out there.
Oh, that's
good.
Great.
Kicking ass over there on the East Coast. Another East Coast person.
Yeah, Philadelphia.
Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah, no, everything's good. Everything's good. We're really happy to be, like, together and doing this and trying to get, you know, directing talk out in the world.
Yeah, I got a question for you guys.
Sure.
How do you adjust your directing styles in regards to the way... in regards to different actors, how they approach their stuff. Because when I did my first short that you saw, I went through it line by line with the actors. But on my thesis film, I went through it more, sat down, talked with them with different ideas and you know, different idea of, like, how to approach the character's arc and stuff. So I don't feel like I found quite the niche, like, my style yet.
Mm-hmm.
So how did you find yours?
Tanya?
Well, actually, Roxanne Dawson, who's an awesome actress and awesome director, again, on NYPD Blue, I had an episode where I had a schizophrenic kid that was beating up his father, and nobody knew why. Mm-hmm. And I had a scene where, it was early in my directing career, and I had a scene where he was supposed to break down talking to a therapist. And it freaked me out. I was like, what am I going to do? So I called Roxanne, and Roxanne told me to read this book called Acting for Directors by Judith Weston, which I would recommend getting. And it really talks about how to speak to an actor and, like, things that actors hear. Like, you don't, and you can jump in if I'm saying something wrong, but you don't say to an actor, you know, pace it up. Because that doesn't...
I have.
Well... don't say it anymore. No,
sometimes it's okay.
But sometimes, depending on your relationship, but, like,
and depending on how professional they are, or, like, you know,
how experienced they are
is what I mean. Like, that they might understand what that means.
Yeah, totally.
Right. And a lot of experienced actors can take that note and understand what it is.
Totally.
But what was interesting in the book was there were what they said was. And I can't think of the actor's name, Paul Newman.
Oh, my God.
And Paul Newman had said in this book, he said, you know, when you feel like a scene is not moving or that it's taking too long, it's not that the scene is taking too long, it's that the two actors in the scene are not connecting. And he said 9 times out of 10, when they are connecting, it's going to be longer than the scene when you felt that it needed to be paced up. So it's really about, and they talk a lot about action-based notes. And if you are talking to a newer actor who may not have their skill set yet, if you give them one thing to think about, like, for instance, you've got two people and they're going to not see each other for a long time and they're in love, you know, you give a note like you want to make every moment last. You don't want to leave. And that actor will play that, and you will get such a great response, and you don't need to tell them anything other than that, because if you give them too many notes, if they don't have, they get confused and you start to lose them. But it's really trying to talk in a way that is motivating to the actor, because you can't say to somebody, be happy. How do you be happy?
It's about being specific about giving actable notes, and, you know, sometimes it's about the tone, it's a broader note about the tone of a scene. And then sometimes it's about a specific moment. If it's clear for you that you can manipulate slightly, it becomes about shades of gray. Mm-hmm. within, you know, it's because also, one big scene you could understand and it could be played so many different ways. It's about both everyone coming together and being able to find it together.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it's also being intuitive about different people's personalities.
Yes,
and absolutely. What they respond to, and you just sort of read their body language, and you can tell, you know, just like when you're in a business meeting and, you know, you're the handshaker or a hugger, or, you know, intuitively learning and observing actors when you do
most
a read-through
incredible.
Or, like, what you...
That's very smart.
To sort of, like, figure out where, you know, to make them feel comfortable.
And being able to speak differently to each one.
Yes.
Sometimes you have to speak... You first just take it all in. Some people you have to speak more to, some people less to, some people... You just have to take
it's
in how
different.
They communicate and then communicate with them in that way.
It isn't like one size fits all with actors. But Jamel, thank you for calling. We have another caller on the line.
Ooh, bye. Thank
wow.
you.
This is awesome.
I know, it's fun. It's good. Hello? Okay. All right. Well, maybe I'll just gonna talk to you.
I got tired.
Well, because some of that, when you're talking about Paul Newman, it kind of makes me think about, you know, great film actors versus TV. And there's definitely a difference.
Absolutely.
In preparation, in how much time and how to do
in
the scene.
Knowing the
you know,
arc of really fully, yeah, it's a whole different animal.
It's a different ball game. So, you know, I don't think, you know, on TV, we just don't have the luxury of having a lot of time to sort of let things happen. But what I find with TV, too, depends on the show. Sometimes we know a show that's been on for a long time and people are a little bit slower or, you know, they're just kind of like a little tired or it's the end of the season or they're at episode 20 or something. Things can kind of slow down a little bit, too. So sometimes I feel like it's just that pacing up direction is about energy. And just sometimes it's just the way I talk to them might get more energetic, hoping that they'll get the message.
Well, and
they should be a little more energetic.
Don't you find, too, that when however you are on the set translates
yes.
to the whole set?
Like, oh, yeah.
If you come in and you're down absolutely. And you're whatever, then the whole set just becomes down. Like,
well,
I'm
I don't.
I know you don't, but I'm just saying if you were to do that.
No, I will. But you know when I get in trouble with it is when I yell cut, when I'm not happy and I'm kind of bummed out about it. I'll be like, okay, cut. And then I like run and they like everyone knows because I'm like a lousy actor. So like everyone will know it sucked.
Because you're judgy because
like,
you totally didn't
yeah,
just say cut and then talk.
Because I didn't say cut. That was great.
Or just say cut, neutral, and then talk to them.
Dude, it's hard. I get like, I'm all in it. And then I'm like, cut. Okay, let's go again. Like, I don't mean to. I try to watch myself. It's hard.
Oh, it is. It's like, I think for, especially an episodic director, it's like you're only in there for 7 to 8 days.
Yeah.
So it's like you need to be able to come in, especially if it's a new show for you, you've got to win everybody over in a matter of seconds.
Yeah.
You know, and then you have to keep it up. And you're right. When you get to the end of a season on a show, people are tired.
Yeah.
They've been overworked. You know, so it's like I always go on and I'm just a super goof. Like I go in there and make jokes and like do this and that. And you can just feel the energy of the entire set. And I always believe that if you have a happy set and happy actors, you know, and everybody's happy, you're going to have a better episode, no matter.
Totally agree. And people are always surprised, like, well, why did they have so many directors? Why don't they just have one? I really think that's a big reason, because we bring different energy, because otherwise, you know, it's always like a dysfunctional family, whether it's a new show, which is, I always equate to like an animal that was just born and doesn't know how to walk. It doesn't even know what way its legs are going to go, or it's been on for, you know, 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's like either way, you know, we're the one that comes and goes.
Well, don't you have the experience too? Like if you go onto a show that's been on for 5, 6, 7 years and it's your first time on the show and it's like you're such a different energy because they've had the same people coming through there and not really having a lot of new people come in. And then it's like everybody gets all excited because they're like, you know, you're trying something new that nobody, because everybody gets stuck in the rules or, oh, we don't come in that door.
They
we
only
don't.
Get excited if you're good.
Well,
you don't
get
excited when some people show up and you're like, really?
Right. Then they just want, but
then
they
like,
kind of get happy if they can just shit talk about you then. It gives them something else to talk about.
No, because especially later in a season, you're just like, ugh. The last thing we need right now.
I always feel like a guest director in TV. I always feel like I'm the aunt that comes at Christmas.
Right.
Like you got to get in and out. You got to bring really good shit with you. and you got to go, and like everybody's going to be missing you and happy that you were there.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly.
You know? But if you show up and you don't bring good shit and you stay too long or like some, or you get everybody sick or something happens, you're like screwed.
Well, you know, the worst totally thing screwed. You can do if you're a new director on a show, or even if you're the recurring director on the show, is if on your very first day of shooting, you walk in and if you don't have a plan and say, okay, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. But if you sit there and go, I wonder where I'm going to put the camera.
Oh no, that's not, you know, good. You hey, can, we have another caller.
You can see the whole crew and cast just go,
that's a nightmare. Hello?
You gotta go.
I'm
like, everybody's
going to
be missing.
Hello?
They butt dialed you.
Oh, I could hear something for a second.
I know.
Yeah, that's like a nightmare. What you're talking about is a nightmare. So what would be the best experience you've had collaborating on, whether it's theater, film, or television?
Oh, wow.
With a writer or a director or both. We have two more calls, all right?
I don't know. I think it's been different. I don't know if there's been a best. I think I've had different collaborations that have been great. I think doing the play on Broadway, because it was something that was written in pieces, and so there were different directors, people that I worked with that were able to give me insight early on. And so the character, I didn't have it all at once. And so there were so many steps and so many ups and downs and fear of like where she was going to go, and trusting that the writer, Stephen Ali Girgis, was actually going to find, you know, her heart, which is something he does so magically with those characters.
I think
it was, there was all different steps and so many different people I did that, those different readings with. And that ended up being an incredible experience because you never knew what was going to happen. I always had to keep, even when we ended up on Broadway, everyone, you know, wants to get caught up in like, oh, now it's a big time. And you're sort of like, no, I have to stay grounded in, I'm doing the same work, whether I'm doing it here or in my theater company, in a 50-seat theater or in a 100-seat theater, off-Broadway, that I had to stay focused on that. And then the
it's
work.
Funny because I remember when you, it was a play that was on Broadway called The Motherfucker with the Hat. Stephen
awesome.
Adley Girgis is one of the most amazing writers, creates characters that are just super relatable to me. I mean, I love them. They're just three-dimensional characters. They're not typical, you know, upper class. Like, they're just regular people.
Right.
With, like, broken dreams, broken hearts.
Flaws and hearts.
And dreams and everything. And so I remember when you were doing that play, which won the Tony, right?
We were nominated for 6 Tonys. It won none. That's a little, you know.
It should have won.
Hello, thank you.
It should have won, for real. It's politics. Such a special play. But the politics, exactly, because they exist everywhere. But I remember when you were doing that play, and you really did have a hard time. I mean, it was a journey. It was like, it wasn't easy. And sometimes then to hear you say, well, the best collaboration, you know, like
it was
such a process that you went through.
It was a intense. Hard time because the play, the character went through so much in that hour and a half that I had to live through it 8 times a week. Mm-hmm. So never did that get easier. You can't fake having your heart ripped out of your, you know, your chest.
How do you do that and not become numb? Like if you have
that was the thing where there was, at some point there was this old, like low level stress that I had just kind of above me that kind of felt like any day now I'm going to be there in the middle of, you know, 900 seat theater with 900 people. And I was, and like my body was going to go, sorry, I'm not playing today. And that was literally this thing that I had to keep at bay and literally live one day, one moment at a time. I could never start the week thinking I have 8 shows to do. Never.
Right.
It was never not this feeling, that exact thing that like my body's not going to be able to do this.
And let's just say this play, like she is full out energy, like high energy, full of like life and anger and like just you're alive on that stage.
Yeah.
And with Bobby Cannavale and Chris Rock and like
Yul
very
Vasquez.
Intense experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it was like loud. Like
it was also incredible because it was like the theater company, the Labyrinth, was going to Broadway.
Right.
3 out of the 4 out of the 5 actors were lab members. Steven was going, the playwright is also a Labyrinth member, one of the founding members, and we were all going to Broadway together and taking that journey, and whether it was going to be accepted or not was also something we did not know, even through previews, because of the name of the play that Steven didn't want to change. We had no idea if it was going to close, you know, the week after it opened. And, you know, the theater, the literatis accepted us. They, you know, the theater people, they were open armed and loved sort of having the naughty moment of saying motherfucker with the hat. It was hilarious. But, you know, it was a play that was a downtown play, and it was now on Broadway, and it affected people in such an incredible way. And our theater girls were also not just the people I see. I go to a lot of theater. It wasn't just the people I see at the theater. It was also people that were non-theater goers, because they were going to see Chris Rock, and they were all moved in ways that I remember.
It was a very diverse cast.
It was an incredibly diverse cast, the most diverse cast I've ever seen, I guess, till maybe Hamilton now, but it was a straight play. And
but that's different because that's a musical.
Yeah, and so exactly, really for a straight
it's
play.
Brilliant.
So, yeah. And so I think that might... And everyone that I met there, I think, after seeing the play.
Now who did you meet? Who came to see you in the
play?
Oh, my
goodness. Who didn't come to see me? Jay-Z. Jay-Z.
Oh, she's lighting up again.
I'm like,
go ahead.
She's getting a little swag.
Little Jay-Z. I can't believe I said that first.
And now her mind's blank.
I know.
No, Jay-Z, P. Diddy. I mean, all kind of actors. I mean, I had...
Oprah came to see you.
Oh, yeah. There was Oprah came to see me and hugged me. And they were incredible.
Meryl Streep came. I know who came to see
her. I mean, the list
is... That's awesome.
The list is like...
Alec Baldwin came to see you. Well, I know everybody came.
I mean, I can't. I have it written. I have like... part of it written. I can't believe I said Jay-Z first. I don't know why. I think because the last thing I said was Chris Rock.
Because
like,
you got some headphones on.
Yeah.
I don't know what that means.
Kanye.
I don't know.
They all came through.
They did.
Incredible, iconic actors that you know, that I just like live for. And then they were being moved. By the time they saw me, they had just experienced this thing. So it was just crazy. Patti LuPone.
Yeah. So going
Frances
back to
McDormand.
Going back to directing, what is McDermott. The dumbest thing that a director has said to you?
The dumbest thing a director has said to me.
Pace it up.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Is actually gotten up and
she could handle that though.
Yeah.
She could handle that.
That I was directed at you.
But I would never tell her that because her I'd be like, easy does it.
Pull it back.
Mary, we'll talk later.
There wasn't one thing. A director that was an actor first, likes to sort of direct by not using words, by actually acting it out.
Oh.
And like down to getting on the floor. And it's really impossible to sort of take them serious. It's actually impossible.
I think we have a caller. Hold on. Yeah. Caller, you're on the air. What's your name?
Hello?
Hello. Hi. Do we keep you waiting? Didn't mean to keep you waiting.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Who are you?
Calling from New York.
Who is this? What's your name?
Bonnie Rose.
Hi, it's Bonnie.
Oh, hi.
Hi, Bonnie.
We got all East Coasters staying up late, New York people. What's up, Bonnie? How are you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
Bonnie is an actress.
Yes.
She was in a lot of Sidney Lumet's movies.
Okay.
And his show.
I'm so excited.
I'm eating a chocolate mint.
100
what, you want to just do my resume and, you know, just do my website
yeah,
and call
I'm
me on
you,
IM?
I'm giving you a shout out. I worked with her on Jessica Jones. Just,
that's
amazing.
So what's up? You have a question for us?
Yeah. First off, I want to congratulate Elizabeth on her second SAG award. And you looked stunning.
Thank you, sweetheart.
You rocked it out of the park.
Thank you. It took a village. I had the best, like most incredibly generous, talented people surrounding me, and a guard lending me, coming over with diamonds, which was amazing.
You're a size two, and you look good on camera. So let's do.
And she's beautiful.
That's because I had a little bit of a food poisoning incident right before Christmas, so that helped get into a size two.
Okay, yeah, it should only happen to me. All right, so anyway, on a different note, here we go. So my question is, what was one moment, and this is for all of you, and I have to tell you that listening to this has been inspirational.
Oh, great.
Directors and a really good working actress, this has been inspirational, really, really insightful.
Good.
On so many different levels. And yes, Oscar Isaac is amazing, and I loved working with him on Inside Llewyn Davis.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
But my question is, So what was one moment that was the highlight, that moment that turned, that you just knew, I'm in this for life? One moment in each of your careers that you just were like...
I don't know. I think...
Good question, Bonnie.
That's a really good question. I don't know if it was that I was in it for life while we were just talking, because I was thinking of Motherfucker with the Hat. I remember.
And you were amazing, and I saw that a couple of times. Go
thank
ahead.
You. I remember once we had a matinee, and then I was going to talk to a bunch of kids, and I asked some of the cast to come and talk to a bunch of kids in between shows. Right after the show, and like while we were talking to these kids, we see a gentleman getting pulled, like it was a theater was empty, and this gentleman was in a wheelchair and he was getting pulled up backwards. And Chris says, "Is that Jack Klugman?"
Oh my God.
And we all looked and we stopped and we ran. The kids, of course, no one knew who he was.
Oh my God.
It didn't matter. We all like jumped off the stage, ran over to him, surrounded him. And we were in complete awe and like just started showering him with like compliments of, oh my God, you're here. This is amazing. We love you so much. You're this icon. And I believe we couldn't really take it in at that moment, but he looked all up to all of us and his eyes got watery. And I think like we couldn't really wrap our brain around it. And then later on we talked about it. And I think like to be able to move another human being that is an icon, that is a giant in what you do, it leaves you thinking that you're doing the right thing, that's why you do it. Because those moments are magical and you don't always know it's happening. So that was kind of an amazing moment.
And what's your moment, Tanya? And we have another caller, but I love this question.
I actually, mine comes back to when I was in college.
And nice to meet you over the phone.
Nice to meet you too. I went to the University of the Pacific and we had 7 drama majors. And so senior year, I wrote a play and directed it for the stage because we only had stage. Mm-hmm. We didn't have any film. I got into USC, but because I had to be away from my family because I grew up in LA, I went to University of Pacific like a dope. But anyway, I wrote a play and directed it for the stage. And I had all my sorority sisters in it because there were no drama majors available to be in my play. And it was a disaster. And then we had one night, it was only a one night showing, and we did it. And everybody like knocked it out of the park. It was like the dress rehearsal, it all came together. And it was like to see what I had written and to see people laughing, and I got hooked. And when I went to my directing class after, we had to talk about it, and I said, if you had asked me a week ago, I would have said, I never want to do this again. But because I had that one night, I was like, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life.
How about you, Rosemary?
Yeah, Rosemary.
Wow. Well, for me, it's a great question. I just love the question. I think it also has to do with audience in a way, because my first thought was when I shot Acts of Worship, my first feature film, first thing I really ever directed.
Amazing, and Elizabeth was in it also.
And you were in it, yes.
And I was in it, yes.
So Acts of Worship, we shot, and then the next day, we were looking at dailies. You know, imagine, like, as a group looking at dailies. And that's what we were doing. So a few of us were looking at dailies, and I remember my husband, Nestor, who was also in the movie and produced the movie with me, and I remember looking at the dailies of this actress, Susan O'Connor, who oddly enough just, like, befriended me today on Facebook, and now I'm talking about her. That's random, because I haven't, like, thought of her in years. Anyway, there were some dailies, and she is, like, playing a Kraken on the street. And she did such a beautiful job and is so truthful. And it wasn't over the top and it wasn't a stereotype. It was just a mom who was a drug addict talking about not wanting to walk by her kids, you know, going mm-hmm. like the long way around so she doesn't have to pass mm-hmm. by where her kids go to school so they don't have to see her. And so just the way she did it. And I remember looking at just that, you know, a couple takes. And I turned around and I saw Nestor standing behind me and he was crying. And I think that was like the first audience that I ever had was like him and his response. It was just rough footage. It was dailies. And I was like, I was so moved by that. I'm like, that's it. And then, of course, being at Sundance and then all of us sitting in the back row of the theater sobbing, like we had crew, the DP, actors, like we were all there because I never got to see it on the big screen before. And then watching the movie and my niece was there and we just the whole back row was a mess. We just sat there crying through the movie. It was like, right, that's an audience. That's what makes you, that's what makes me feel like I'm
being
in the right place.
Being able to touch someone,
Yeah, that's what it is.
It crosses all boundaries, like race, religion, and politics.
Great question, Bonnie. You're giving us a big dose of gratitude up here. Really appreciate it. Thanks for the inspiration.
Thank you. Mwah.
All right, love you. See you soon.
Bye. Oh, that's a good question. Okay, there's another caller. Caller, you're on the air. Okay, I think it dropped. Oh, well, hopefully they'll call back. That was a good question. If we get, like, sort of inspiration out there and get a little gratitude for ourselves and, like, perspective, I think that would be a pretty cool thing to come out of this.
I think it'd be great, too. And it's, like, it's interesting to hear what makes everybody want to do this because it isn't necessarily it's a great job, don't get me wrong, but it's not necessarily the easiest job to forge ahead. So when you get bit by the bug, it's like you know, it takes a lot of effort, but it's great.
Yeah, that's an understatement for actors.
All right, we're gonna wrap it up. We're gonna wrap it up, but I think that we have one more call. Caller, you're on the air. Oh, you're not on yet. Okay, we'll be on soon. But yeah. What did you just say that I missed?
I said
you?
That it was an understatement for actors.
Oh, being difficult.
Yeah.
Hello. Difficult job. Hello.
Hey.
Who's this?
This is Harry. How you doing?
What's up, Harry?
This is so weird. I was just browsing through the internet and I came upon this this director's chair thing and. I've been trying to call for the last 30 minutes, and I just keep getting disconnected or something. It's weird. How you doing?
Sorry about that, Harry. You sound pretty familiar, though. What's up? You have a question?
Well, Harry's a pretty common name. Well, first of all, I just want to say that the show is amazing. I'm definitely loving it. You guys were talking earlier about actors and things directors tell actors, and I just couldn't help but think to ask, what's the craziest thing that you've heard, and this is for Elizabeth, that a director or a casting director or a producer has told you in an audition? And also the same question to the directors. I mean, you guys have been in casting sessions. So what's the craziest thing that you've seen someone tell an actor during an audition?
During an audition... I don't know. I mean, I've been called back and told to come in sexier. Which then you're just like, oh.
They said what?
Like, I
come
got
back sexier?
They didn't tell me in the room, but then I had to call back and I had to come back with like a shorter dress and like a fluffier hair. And then you get sort of in your head. Because now you're sort of trying to play something else.
I had one that was actually, it wasn't something that, it was an episode that I directed, but it wasn't something that I wanted. We had an actor come in and he was sort of an effeminate gangster. And he was really funny. The show was a comedy. And he knocked it out of the park. And then he was made to be brought back in because some people politic-wise wanted to see whether he could do it more straight. And it was like trying to direct the guy to do, because it was written very effeminate. So it wasn't really like you could deliver it straight. Like, and so just to watch him do it and try and accommodate the note when it wasn't in the script was really kind of, I felt really bad for the guy because it was like, well, just, you know, because it, the people who wanted it were watching it on tape, and they want, so we ended up giving like a bunch of different reads where what he did, he like, and he got cast for the part, but
well, at
but
least he got that.
He did, but then the sad thing that happened was we did it and it was very funny and it was great. And then they cut everything out of the show because they decided that it was too effeminate. And it's like, well,
oh, man.
Well, wait a minute. Well, why are you doing, like, it was like a whole waste of everybody's time. And the actor ridiculous. Called me and he said, you know, I went to ADR and everything's cut out and I don't understand. And I'm like, look, it wasn't you. And it wasn't me. Right. It just was
terrible.
Yeah,
welcome to my life. It wasn't you.
It wasn't you. Yeah, that's terrible.
How about you, Rosemary?
I don't really have like something crazy. I mean, what came to my mind is having casting the show that was on called Vegas, a CBS show, and having Rance Howard, who's Ron Howard's dad, come up with his wife. So that's like a good half hour drive, 45 minutes, an hour, depending on where you're coming from in LA. And like driving up there, and he's 80 something years old, driving up for an audition for like a one scene part, coming up there. And of course I was going to cast him. I mean, you know, it's crazy. It's not even a good place to eat up there for lunch. I mean, they just came up there and were going to come around. And then being told, oh, well, the network, he's, you know, he's going to be casting. He's doing like NCIS, like, you know, in a couple weeks, or he did it a couple weeks ago. So we really don't want him on another CBS show. And I was like, what? That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. But
I got one. How about the time where Rosemary was trying to cast me in one of her episodes of something? And
like
and
everything,
wait. And then I get an email from my manager that's like, that's a forwarded email from a casting agent's assistant to be like, so we spoke to Rosemary and she wants Elizabeth to put herself on tape for a character that didn't have a name. And this wasn't like a long time ago. This was like last year, 2015, ridiculous. Which I was like, what?
Oh, I catch them out there all the time. I meet actors.
That was hilarious.
Like,
I was like, this kid right here needs to. It was amazing.
It happens all the time where actors are told things that like I didn't say or I'll ask for them and they'll be like, oh, no. And it comes around.
Yeah.
It's like ridiculous. Yeah. They just bullshit. But yeah, trying to get you just so I could work with you and hang out with you today because you're so busy. I don't get
so
to hang out
fun.
With you. And I love you. So it's like, it was just like a day part or something. And they want her on tape. I'm like, really? Come on, dude.
So I was like, even if I didn't know somebody, I know. If I didn't know you, for everyone listening, I don't do under fives and day or co-stars.
Well, you will.
I was
going to
do
it.
Maybe.
Come on now.
Maybe.
Oh, you were
going to
do it.
Maybe last year.
Don't even.
Maybe last year.
I've known you for like, what, an hour now? You were going to do it.
Maybe last year. I got two SAGs.
We're gonna wrap this up.
I just don't want anybody else calling up with these ideas.
No.
I'm calling.
You have to be related.
Yeah.
You have to be related.
No.
Only in the family. That's it. I get you.
Hey,
I get you.
Can I say one more thing?
Oh, yeah, but I got to wrap it up, though. Come on, Harry.
Okay.
What's up?
I just want to say that character, that effeminate gangster, for the next time the writer writes something, those guys are called ghetto thugged out gay dudes. Okay.
Well, you know, on the same show, I had the best scene description ever was the biggest gun battle the network and studio will allow.
Oh, that's good.
It was good. It was like
that's good. All right. Thank you.
Thank you for coming. Thank you. And you guys got anything you want to promote? You're going to be on Devious Maids. Where can they find you? Twitter, Facebook. What's up?
Oh yeah, that Instagram. The only Elizabeth Rodriguez. That's because there's so many of us. I had to say the only.
There's Elizabeth Rodriguez.
And then there's, what am I on Twitter? E. Rodriguez.
They're
both verified.
Okay, great. E. Rodriguez. Okay, Antonia?
I am not verified at all.
I'm verifying you right now.
Okay, great. Thanks. I am on Instagram. I'm Tanya _ I guess it's called Cannell _ McKiernan. And then my Twitter is Tanya Mick. I think, yeah. It's Tanya Mick or Tanya McKiernan. And then I have a Facebook page too that's Tanya McKiernan.
Excellent. And you can find the director's chair at weplayradio.com.
Hey, what about your information?
And Twitter, yep, Rosemary Rodriguez on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram at Rosemary Directs. So tune in next time and subscribe, download, keep us on your radar. Thank you.
Good night.
Thank you.
Come on, people. It's time to live it up.